Our next paper is entitled Patient Characteristics and System-Level Factors Associated with Prenatal Influenza Vaccination Counseling, Findings from the Los Angeles Mommy and Baby Survey, and LAM is probably the best acronym a survey could ever have. Our speaker is Erin Salaby, and Dr. Salaby earned her degrees in medicine and public health from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She completed a residency training in OBGYN at the University of California in San Francisco. And she's currently a Robert Wood Johnson Clinical Scholar at the University of California in Los Angeles. While she was in San Francisco, Dr. Salaby treated many pregnant patients with H1N1 influenza, and she wrote the guidelines for screening and treatment of pregnant patients for city and county departments of public health. So please, let's welcome Dr. Salaby.
Hi, thank you all for having me to speak with you today about the findings from the Los Angeles Mommy and Baby Survey. Lambs, it is really cute. I just want to first say I have no relationships to disclose. And I want to thank my co-authors and all the many institutions that have been influential in getting the LAM survey out, collected, and the data set finalized. So, as you've just heard, pregnant women are at incredibly high risk for poor outcomes when infected with influenza, and that's been the case not just in H1N1 influenza, but you know, even as early as the Spanish flu, and there's documentation prior to that that there's an increased morbidity and mortality associated with flu infection during pregnancy. In 2008, however, just the season before the H1N1 pandemic, only 11% of pregnant women got a flu vaccination during their prenatal care. It's a really shocking statistic, I think. Flu vaccination was in 2008 and has been for many, many years, recommended by ACOG, the American Congress of OBGYN, the ACIP, which is CDC, and AAFP and the World Health Organization. I think even AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommends flu vaccination for moms because of the fact that vaccination confers protection for neonates, and neonates and infants even have about half the risk of hospitalization for influenza if their mothers have been vaccinated during pregnancy, which is a pretty substantial risk reduction. So lots of good reasons to get vaccinated, even though women haven't been historically. So the H1N1 influenza pandemic really emphasized the importance of this public health measure, especially for women. During that flu season, vaccination among pregnant women jumped to 51%, although we continue to see quite severe effects of influenza during pregnancy. There has been some concern and consternation about the fact that there were a lot of resources that went into trying to improve that vaccination rate from the 11% to the 51%, which was a significant, yet, you know, we still had some work to do kind of gain, but it took a lot of resources. There was a lot of public health dollars that went into provider education, to multimedia marketing campaigns, basically provider detailing. It was very, very resource intensive for a lot of health departments just to get the word out that this was a high-risk group and that we really needed to focus our attentions on vaccinating women during pregnancy. But there was some recently published data that came out that showed how much that provider detailing actually did impact vaccination rates, and I think it really underscores the importance that provider counseling provides in terms of vaccination rates, and you know, the H1N1 vaccination in particular had a huge impact by provider counseling. Sorry, the receipt of it. So I basically looked at this LAMS data set, which is a 2007 study, and it's taken a little while to get all that data collected and weighted appropriately and everything, but basically as a back to the future kind of study. So I wanted to take a look and see, you know, during those times when we had 11% vaccination rates, what were we doing as a system, and who were the patients who were who were disadvantaged in terms of receipt of vaccination, so that we might know what we're like under usual circumstances. So sort of like contraception, what happens under usual circumstances and what happens under ideal circumstances. So under ideal circumstances, we're at 51%. So what's happening at that 11% mark? And so that might then give us the looking back might give us the lens towards the future of what we can do to try to strategically focus those limited resources that all of the health departments and hospital systems have on trying to maintain sort of strategic emphasis on this population going forward. So basically looking at patient characteristics, some traditional disparities, as well as some a little bit non-traditional ones, since we have such an interesting population in Los Angeles, as well as system level factors, basically looking at site of care. So the hypotheses being that patient characteristics, including nativity, being non-U.S. born, or speaking languages other than English in the home, might have some association with the likelihood of receiving flu vaccination counseling. There are a lot of barriers, obviously, to counseling with somebody who doesn't speak your own native language, and services for translation are sometimes limited. And so that was a potential association that we wanted to look at, as well as looking at the different hospital types, clinic types, places that people receive care, to see if there's any sort of trend there that's worth noting in terms of efforts for the future. So we looked at the LAMS 2007 cross-sectional population-based survey that's similar to the PRAMS database that you're probably all familiar with. It's a stratified random sample of new mothers that's they're identified based on HRSA birth certificate data. And it's a mixed mode, so it's self-administered in terms of a mailed questionnaire, and then we did this long process of follow-up with non-respondents to try to make sure that we had a representative sample. And so ultimately, so just over 4,000 women from that wave with live births. The measure itself is about 100 questions covering a range of determinants of birth and pregnancy outcomes that looked at preconception care, prenatal care, and postnatal care, and it sort of gives a unique kind of spectrum of influences on the pregnancy interval and birth outcomes. It takes about an hour to complete. It's at a sixth grade readability, and it's a variety of languages because our population, as you'll see, might speak a variety of languages. And just to give you a sense of the population for the characteristics that we're particularly interested in, there's a pretty even split between women who receive prenatal care at what we call private MD offices, and I realize that's a very heterogeneous group, but when compared to sort of more structural kinds of systems like HMOs, public clinics, that's sort of more health department related, and also hospital clinics. So trying to look at those two things to compare, and then also quite a number of uninsured patients, which in California, if any of you all are aware, is really rare among pregnant women, because we do have an emergency Medi-Cal there that basically has everybody being eligible for prenatal care under Medicaid, even regardless of their immigration status. So it's kind of curious that so many women were not aware that they had insurance available. Then also just looking at race, ethnicity, makeup, quite a large number of Hispanic women, which is not unexpected given the demographics of Los Angeles, and the nativity, quite a high number of non-U.S. born. So this sample, again, is quite unique in its ability to examine these specific kinds of predictors. And just the more traditional things you might be wondering about, income and education. Education is actually quite evenly spread, and income, as we see, a concentration of more poor women responded to the survey. So the survey item itself, it was this banner header with then a lot of different questions underneath it, and the specific item that we were looking at was getting a flu vaccination during pregnancy. I just want to call your attention to the fact that it specifically states that it could be some person in the context of your healthcare provision. So a doctor, a nurse, a healthcare worker, a health educator. There's also a California program, CPSP, that a lot of Medicaid-eligible women receive counseling from quite a number of ancillary service providers, health educators, nutritionists, social workers. So within the context of that team, any one of those people could have been recommending the flu vaccination for you, just not a video or a pamphlet or, you know, some kind of non-person recommendation. So we looked at a logistic regression model with the outcome being the receipt of prenatal counseling for flu vaccination with those predictors I previously mentioned, the nativity, the language spoken, and the site of care, and then adjusted for a bunch of different sort of standard demographic characteristics, and also some comorbid conditions which might make you think you'd be a little more likely to receive counseling, like you have heart disease pre-existing, maybe we should try not to insult your lungs on top of that during this already critical time for cardiovascular functioning. And so I wanted to make sure that those got added into the model as well. You can see that consistent with data across the U.S., only about 38% of women receive flu vaccination counseling during their prenatal course. And that, looking at the actual site of care, the private doctor's offices, which again are a heterogeneous group, were significantly associated with the decreased odds of receiving flu vaccination counseling. So maybe a little triumph for public health there. And you can see that graphically here. Again, looking at a little bit more the traditional disparities, socioeconomic for sure, but then, interestingly, education did not seem to correlate, which was a little bit unexpected for me. And then none of the language nor nativity. So those were some unexpected results from my perspective, just because I feel like that would be a really big barrier, especially with the time crunch folks feel they have in a visit. And then adding translation services on top of that. So it was interesting that that didn't fall out. So thinking about this in context, I mean, we know we're missing a really, really big opportunity for promoting maternal and child health through prevention, in this instance with flu vaccination during the course of prenatal care, and the consequences can be incredibly severe, especially during pandemic flu seasons or particularly virulent strains of flu that come about. And so basically, I would hope that we could take a look at some data that we have, such as this, to think about ways that we could strategically place resources or target specific groups of providers who might be a little bit under-resourced or don't have the system-level kinds of support structures in place to be recommending this really needed service for women during pregnancy. It's a little bit difficult, again, with the heterogeneous group of what a private MD office is. I mean, women can take that to mean a variety of things, but in the city and county of Los Angeles, especially within this group being such low income, likely Medicaid recipients, there are a lot of single doctors in strip malls all over that accept Medi-Cal, and it's difficult to know how to particularly reach out and bolster the efforts that those doctors, resources that those doctors have to be providing sort of comprehensive care during the course of prenatal care for the women that they serve. But it does seem like that's a potential group that we need to be looking further at for the health of women and children. Some of the strengths of the study is that it does have this nice randomly selected sample throughout Los Angeles, and it has those demographics that I talked about we don't have at the national level to quite the same degree as we do in Los Angeles County. We did do a lot of follow-up to try to get that data to be representative, and it does measure the content of prenatal care, not just the utilization of it. We would like to have had some data about whether or not women actually received the flu vaccination, and that's just a little bit extrapolating on knowing that, you know, the recent CDC data, I think, shows that the counseling is quite predictive of receipt, and something like 72% of women who were recommended by their provider to get the H1N1 vaccine actually received it. So, you know, if you believe that, then hopefully these numbers mean something to you. But in the future, it would be nice to be able to tie that with actual records. So if you'd like to find out more about the LAND study, it's easy to remember. You can probably Google it. Don't write that whole thing down. Or you can email me if you have any further questions. Okay. Apparently we have time for questions if you're not flued out by now. Yes?
That was great presentation. I wonder if your numbers might allow you to look at sort of interactions. You wonder if maybe in a private hospital, in a private MD clinic, whether your language or your reason to see makes a difference and maybe the infrastructure isn't available for what that right. might be available for larger health for translation.
Right. We would like to be able to do some of those analyses, and the data set was actually merged with HRSA data. It took quite a while to get to this place, so this is the preliminary final analysis. It's not yet finalized. So we are going to look at those groups. I'd also like to look at by insurance type, and we do have that data. It's going to require some imputation because there's a lot of missing data, so the imputation hasn't been done yet. So there are going to be some sort of stratification and analysis and interactions as well that we'd like to do. Yeah.
Are there any data on adverse reactions from these vaccines?
Uh, Adverse reactions. I mean, in terms of case reports, I think that most of it has been sort of coincidental, sort of the timing. It's unclear if the woman had flu before. You know, there's always sort of that, well, I'm not going to get the flu vaccine because it gave me the flu last time. So most of the reporting is around that. In terms of severe reactions, I don't think that there have been any reports of severe reactions to either. I think it's being collected by, it's required to be reported to FDA, so, you know, I don't know that there's been any sort of final analyses of this season, I mean, certainly not of this season's, but of the H1N1, I haven't seen anything that's come out that's been pointing to that particular component of what's now in all of these flu vaccines being particularly problematic, no. And certainly getting the flu has been. Anybody else? Thank you.